I would like to welcome our second panel to the witness table. The Honorable Ron Allen, who is the treasurer of the National Congress of American Indians in Washington, D.C., and the chairman of the Jamestown Tsklalam Tribe of Sequim, Washington. We also have with us Mary Jane Oatman Wakwak. She serves as the president of the National Indian Education Association here in Washington, D.C. Also joining us is the Honorable Earl Barbary, Sr., from the United South and Eastern Tribes in Nashville, Tennessee. He also serves as chairman of the Tunica-Biloxi Tribe of Louisiana in Marksville, Louisiana. Finally, we have the Honorable James Steele, Jr., who is the first vice president of the Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians, located in Portland, Oregon, and also a council member in the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes of Pablo, Montana. Mr. Allen, will you please begin with your statement?
Thank you, Chairman Akoska. As you have stated, my name is Ron Allen. I'm chairman for the Jamestown Tsklalam Tribe, located in western Washington State, and treasurer for NCAI. It's always an honor to come before the committee, and we join the chorus of congratulations in your new chairmanship, and we're looking forward to you working with you and the committee on the myriad of issues that face our Native communities throughout America. We know you are well aware of those challenges, and inclusive of, we are highly anticipating the passage of the Native Hawaiian bill that you come close to last session and hope that will happen this session. On behalf of the President Jefferson Keel of NCAI and our executive board, we've submitted to you our testimony, and we thank you for accepting the testimony and putting it in the record. We'd also like to ask that our book that we put out every year called Indian Country Budget Request that NCI coordinates with the other national Indian organizations, including NIA and so forth, that would also be submitted for the record. Without a doubt, when Indian Country comes to the Congress and makes requests with regard to our respective community needs, the needs are great. And so often over the past years, we used to focus in on the BIA and IHS. Well, that's just simply not the case anymore. HUD has a role, EPA has a role, energy has a role, transportation has a role, agriculture has a role, and so forth, even to the Department of Defense with regard to the interests of Indian Country. We're very delighted that Congress passed a couple of major bills last session, the Affordable Health Care Act, which included the reauthorization of the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which you have so noted already in the previous panel. That was a big deal to us. The Law and Order Act is a big deal to us in terms of the authority of the tribes, our ability to take care of our own people and care for the safety, the public safety of our people. There are a lot of issues that are important to us. But nothing is more important than the exercise of our sovereignty, the exercise of our governmental authority and our jurisdiction to care for the future of our people, the current conditions as well as the future. And the issue for us is the legislation is meaningful, but it is how you appropriate the resources in order to implement the commitment in the laws. The laws are meaningful, but unless that they can actually make a difference within our communities, they're rhetoric. And so these budget requests that we put out are important to us. We want to express our appreciation to the administration that they have fought hard for our Indian budgets. You have heard from IHS, you know, that they have a fairly substantial increase a 450 or 8 or so million dollar increase into their 4.6, I think, billion dollar budget. Sounds impressive. But when you measure that against the conditions of our Indian citizens across America, we have a long ways to go. And we know you've heard countless testimony about what those needs are. Now, the ACA Act improves that situation for us. And what is the IHS's role with CMS and the new CSIL with regard to implementation of the Healthcare Improvement Act, so that we can reach out to the other 60%+ of our Indian citizens across America that are not served by the antiquated IHS system that serves only in the service area and not outside the service area. So those are going to be big issues for us. We want to note to you that the BIA, the Department of Interior and the BIA have made a major step in moving our agenda forward in terms of implementing the trust obligation. They now, one of their fundamental goals is the empowerment of tribal governments. So the BIA budget needs to reflect that. And if you look at the Department of Interior over the past number of years, you see these substantial increases for parks and reclamation and minerals and fish and wildlife. At the bottom of the pecking order of the priority for the budget system is the BIA budget. Over the years, we have the lowest growth of any budget of the Department of Interior. So the goal doesn't reflect the budget. It doesn't reflect that kind of a commitment. 565 Indian Nation, complex from the largest tribe of Navajo Nation to the smallest tribe, that has a myriad of issues. And the budget needs to reflect our ability to become self-reliant. So if we can't become self-reliant, if you're not empowering the tribal governmental infrastructure, the legal infrastructure, the physical infrastructure, if you don't empower us to be able to create jobs, to create businesses, to create revenues outside of the federal government, then we'll never be able to accomplish our goals. The treaties and the trust obligation have many commitments to Indian country. But quite frankly, we know you can't get there. So help us get there together. And these budgets, with regard to loan guarantee programs, surety bonding guarantee programs, things that will empower our governments and our businesses so we can make meaningful progress to this agenda. I will close since I see my time is up. It's always difficult to try to capture the complex issues. Our testimony and our budget request, I think, capture those important issues that are in here. We can certainly get into details with you and look forward to working with you and answering any questions we might. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Allen. Now we'll receive the statement of Mary Jane Oatman Wakwa. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Akalka. Thank you to the Creator for gathering us all here today. Thank you to the committee for inviting the National Indian Education Association to participate in this hearing. NIEA has been tirelessly dedicated to promoting Native education issues and embracing every opportunity to advocate for the unique education and culturally related needs of all of our Native students. In February, I had the opportunity to provide the State of Native Education Address. And through this address, we focused on the trust responsibility, its breach, the resulting poverty in Indian communities as a result of that breach, and shared with Indian country our vision as well as mechanisms for restoring that trust through education. Through collaborative efforts and partnerships with the tribes, federal agencies, and state governments. A part of that restoration and the reason that we address you today is to address the federal budget, which is most likely the most tangible manner in which we can address the restoration of that trust responsibility and the breach of that trust. Because it all begins and ends with culture. Culture is our identity as Native people, our languages, our traditions. If our schooling for our Native students does not reinforce culture within the classrooms, our students tend to become disengaged within that school and within their community. I say this without diminishing any other aspect of the education process, because NIEA embraces a 200% education philosophy, 100% of their traditional cultures and values merged with 100% high-quality content academia. So we see that as the emergence of those two being how our Native students are going to be thrive and succeed in the 21st century. Our statistics are also very harsh. Ironically, Native education has well-documented statistics that paint the bleak picture of Native student outcomes. Yet, at the same time, we have inadequate research to focus on promising practices and models that can work on that transformation and turnaround throughout Indian country. Among the most telling statistics in the nation is the graduation rate for American Indian high school students, which was 50% in 2005-2006, compared to 69.2% overall and 76.1% for white students. Addressing the dropout issue, we feel we cannot do realistically without examining some of the other issues around adequate yearly progress and high school completion. We also have to look at the racial discrimination in school environment that many of our Native students are being situated in that lead to some of the concerns addressed earlier with detention facilities and many of our Native serving schools being that school to prison pipeline. We also understand that addressing Native education in the time of tight budgets it causes us to have to make those difficult decisions in this critical funding area for Indian education. What we ask and what we've continued to advocate for in these tight times is to hold Native education harmless. We also understand the situation that you are all up against in looking at areas where there might be duplication or replication of services. We have also taken that time to do that throughout Indian country. And so the proposals that I bring before you today have been examined through that lens of the tight budget considerations as well as the perception or any reality of duplication or replication of Indian serving programs. Because it has been the mark of the history of this country to have some very anti-Indian policies that kind of led us to the situation where we are with our bleak statistics, we embrace the No Child Left Behind Title VII policy, which has been a more humane policy for Indian country to address the unique educational and culturally related needs of Native students. The National Indian Education Association urges Congress to fulfill the promises made within No Child Left Behind and stand strong for Native youth in the 2012 budget. If the federal government should cut its investment in Indian education initiatives, not only will this be a violation of that trust responsibility, but it will also be setting Indian education back for generations with an untold loss among our Native youth. When you weigh the budget issues against the needs of Native education, even President Obama's FY 2012 budget is insufficient to bring about the transformational change that we need for Native education. We ask that the committee make every effort to seek increases in this budget, even as we understand the work that you must succeed at the end of the day in the budget cuts. In that context, it is all more important to marry the budget to the smart policies that multiply the value of every dollar and to promote an emphasis on the culture and language instruction, increase in local and tribal control over education as we look to steward our greatest natural resource throughout Indian country, our children, and promote an emphasis on increasing effective collaborations and partnerships among tribes, education organizations, governmental agencies, and state education agencies in order to accomplish what is best for our children. Because the budget is made up of very specific programs, NIEA believes that the recommendations that we will focus with you on today are regards to Title VII, education facilities construction, tribal grant support costs, address some concerns within the BIE budget, as well as some no-cost proposals or initiatives that will yield huge improvements throughout Native education. And before I close, we'll also address some concerns with the continuing resolution as well. A growing body of research through the Kamehameha schools and studies that have been done on culturally based education in Hawaii are showing resounding results that the well-being, self-worth, resiliency, and identity of Native students correlates to an increased academic achievement and school success. We urge that Title VII National Activities Research dollars have a heavy emphasis and focus on the correlation between culturally based education programs in the classroom and that success in core content areas within the academic components. We also urge your support, and not just level funding, but increased funding within those Title VII programs so that we can address the unique cultural and academic needs within the classroom, as well as the research that is needed to show that those programs are work. Unfortunately, Indian education has been studied to death with a deficit model, and we know that there are successful programs that are out there working throughout Indian country, and we urge support so that we can undertake those kind of studying with a larger end size so that we can say this is what works for Indian country. Education construction is a huge concern for the National Indian Education Association. This assures an adequate facility to learn. Safe and secure schools are a huge concern, but we also realize that most of our schools that are serving Native students within the BIE school systems have severe concerns. Of the 4,495 education buildings in the BIA inventory, half of them are more than 30 years old. 20% are older than 50 years old, and on average, the BI education buildings are 60 years old, yet 40 years is the average life for a public school condition. 65% of school administrators report that the physical conditions of one or more school buildings are inadequate. We've seen situations where detention facilities were closed due to having poorer conditions than the facilities that our students are being forced to be educated in. We know that the Department of Interior, in developing the 2012 budget request, was forced to make those difficult decisions. Although we understand that this is the situation, redirecting funding for replacement school construction is a concern, because we realize that not only do we have the concern with the backlog with the BIE school construction, but that deferring the critically needed buildup of the new facilities could bring higher costs in the future. When we take into account the cost of inflation and construction costs in the future. We also want to address tribal grant support costs within the scope of increasing tribal control. These tribal grant support costs foster tribal self-determination and enable both the transfer of the responsibility and the means for tribal entities to run their own schools and control the education of our youth. The FY 2012 budget asks for the same amount of the tribal grant support cost funding requested in the FY 2011 budget, even though there are two and perhaps as many as five more schools that would be sharing their slice of the pie of the $46.3 million requested.
Ms. Wakwak, will you please summarize your statement?
In closing, we would like to bring forward a few of those no-cost initiatives within the Bureau, or within our recommendations. One of those is to require the Department, the Secretary of the Department of Education, as well as Interior, to align their agency budgets and policies to ensure more adequate access to general education opportunities, as well as perhaps a call for a new government accounting office review of some of the concerns within the agency, not the schools themselves, but within the agency at the Department of Interior, and some of the concerns around school construction funding. In closing, concerns around continuing resolution is specifically in regards to the elimination of Perkins funding, which would substantially devastate two tribally operated technical colleges. So with that, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your statement. Chairman Earl Barbary, will you please proceed with your statement?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. I'm Chairman Earl Barbary of the Chittenden Blessed Tribe from Louisiana. I'm also Chairman of the United South and Eastern Tribes Carceri Task Force. As you know, the President's budget includes a legislative fix for the Carceri decision, and I'm very pleased to testify in strong support for that provision. USAID firmly believes the Supreme Court's decision is a fundamental attack on tribal sovereignty. The Court's decision creates two classes of federally recognized tribes that would be treated differently under federal law. Tribes that were under federal jurisdiction in 1934 and tribes that were not. The decision also opens the door to confusion about the status of tribal lands, tribal businesses, and important civil and criminal jurisdictional issues. Mr. Chairman, my written testimony provides a number of technical points about why the President's proposal is needed. Today, I'll share some personal thoughts from Tunica's perspective. At the time of the Louisiana Purchase in 1803, Tunica Biloxi owned tens of thousands of acres of land in Louisiana. Through fraud, deceit, encroachment, and cold-blooded murder, that's what I said, cold-blooded murder, our land holdings dwindled to a fraction of that amount. In 1826, a federal land commissioner said that we were savages, unable to manage our own land, and stripped of us of Tunica settlement that included thousands of acres. Then in the 1840s, a local Dunedin landowner who regularly encroached on Tunica land shot and killed Chief Melicon, who confronted the landowner and protested his encroachment. Mr. Chairman, sadly, the chief lost his life because he was doing something that the federal government failed to do, and that's to provide protection for our lands and the rights of the Tunica people. By the time the local courts considered this incident, Tunica land holdings had been reduced to 134 acres. That individual got away with cold-blooded murder and our land, and that was wrong. This was the amount of Tunica land holdings when we were federally recognized in 1980. Since that time, through trust applications, acquisitions, we have been able to ensure a land base for current tribal members and for future generations. So to me, the Carcieri fix is about Tunica's survival. Mr. Chairman, the Carcieri fix proposed here does nothing more than restore the understanding of the IRA held by the Department of Interior and tribes around the country for 75 years before the Carcieri decision. But, however, Congress's failure to act may have dire consequences. For example, it creates a significant threat to public safety. The decision complicates federal prosecution of crimes committed in Indian country, as well as civil jurisdiction over much of Indian country. Again, I must emphasize the role of IRA in protecting tribal homelands and promoting tribal self-determination. Under IRA, tribes have been able to rebuild the land bases that are the very foundation of tribal governments. Tribal trust applications, acquisitions have help protect traditional practices and have also helped spur tribal economic development. This has created much needed financial resources, including jobs for tribal communities and surrounding non-Indian communities. I urge the committee to quickly move the proposed IRA amendment through the Senate. Likewise, USET urges the committee to support funding increases substantially above the inflation rate in several key areas. First, tribal priority allocation, or TPA, is the principal source of funds for many tribal governments and is used across many areas of need. Past reports indicate that the TPA falls well short of identified need. We ask that the funding for the Eastern Region's tribes TPA increase by at least $9.4 million. Tribal courts are another area of concern. In the Eastern Region, only 46% of those tribes receive BIA funding for the operation of their tribal courts. Without tribal courts, tribes are often unable to provide for the protection and well-being of tribal members. Many programs, including Indian child welfare, adult protection, and child support enforcement, require tribes to have established judicial systems before taking on these programs. Finally, contract support costs are a key area for this committee to consider. When contract support costs are not fully funded, tribes must use limited direct program service dollars for tribal resources to cover shortfalls, often forcing tribes to cut or underfund other important programs. The President's proposed increase brings BIA to 94% of fully meeting the obligation. Other bureaus within the Department of Interior, as with other federal agencies, have achieved their obligation of paying 100% of contract support to their non-native contractors. discrepancy cannot continue, and might add, it also is discriminatory. Again, thank you for this committee. Thank you, this committee, for giving me the opportunity to testify here today. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Barbary. Now I'll call on Mr. Steele for your statement.
Hess Greggs, Kisu Kukit. Good morning, Chairman and committee members, and especially want to congratulate Senator Kaka on his new chairmanship of the committee. Also, I'd like to thank Senator Tester for the warm greeting and welcome earlier. I very much appreciate it and appreciate his work on behalf of us in Montana and Indian Country. My name is James Steele, Jr. I'm the first vice president of the Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians, and I'm also a council member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes. AT&I appreciates the opportunity to testify on the president's 2012 budget affecting Indian tribes in the Northwest. As, of course, many of you may know and many of you may not, that the tribes in Montana and Wyoming, Oregon, Idaho, the Northwest are a diverse bunch. A diverse group of tribes that rely on a variety of natural resources from timber, agriculture. Some of our tribes are involved in mining, hydroelectric projects, and such. A variety of our tribes have their founding relationship with the United States government based on treaties. And it's from that responsibility of the United States government that we in the Northwest believe that our relationship starts with the federal government. I want to mention a little bit about the Honorable Congressman Mike Simpson from Idaho, the chairman of the House Interior Appropriations Subcommittee, in which he committed to try and protect BIA and IHS funding, and he indicated a desire to, quote, hold programs with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and IHS harmless. He wrote that the federal government has a responsibility to help tribes meet needs and solve problems in Indian Country. We hope his views are shared by others. Due to the diversity of our economies in the Northwest, it is difficult to suggest what top priorities within the federal budget might vary from tribe to tribe. The responsibilities and the priorities are different from tribe to tribe, and to determine what should be cut is difficult. I will say one thing about the federal budget that is going through Congress right now. The talk of shutdowns and radical budget cuts scares our people. Due to the tremendous influence of the federal government that has on our Indian reservations and the people of our Indian reservations, a shutdown would hit us harder than any other segment of American population. Our BIA-funded schools, our IHS-funded clinics would apparently close down very quickly. It really is a large concern, and I hope Congress, particularly your colleagues in the House, really consider the consequences of their actions. Mr. Chairman, we understand about budget deficits and the need to reduce them, and I believe the Indian people would be willing to contribute their fair share of reductions needed. But first, we need to get to the point where we have something even resembling parity with the rest of the population. No more clear example of this can be found in what the federal government spends on health care for various federal beneficiaries. The Indian Health Service spends $1,900 per year. Sorry, I lost my spot there. Per tribal member. The federal government spends $3,700 on federal employees for health care, $3,800 for federal prisoners for health care, and almost $6,000 for veterans for health care. Are we really worth half of a federal prisoner and a third of a veteran, even when so many of our tribal people have bravely fought for this country? What other explanation is there? There are similar comparative figures relative to law enforcement and natural resource management. Please point these horrible disparities out to your colleagues in the Budget and Appropriations Committee and ask them if they can be cutting these funds for our people. One of the things I want to just real quickly mention off of my prepared statements here is one thing that we really need in Indian Country in terms of self-determination and self-governance is that we need regional offices and directors of the Bureau of Indian Affairs to come alongside and help the tribes. Recently, the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes converted more 37,000 fee acres to trust, more than any region in the country in the Bureau of Indian Affairs region. How was that accomplished? One, we had a regional director named Stan Speaks that came along the tribes and helped us get it accomplished. Two, we compacted and run our own title plant. And with that, you have to have a partnership between the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the tribe to get things done. Many times in many regions, the tribe wants to do something, but the Bureau of Indian Affairs does not want them to do it. Our tribe is an example. We were in the Billings area region. We were a self-governance tribe. The Billings area didn't want to help us in the 80s. We moved to the Northwest region because the Northwest region was willing to help our tribes be self-sufficient and self-determining. Mr. Chairman, we had a good example this morning from Senator Tester's questions to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. That is an example of what tribes go through every day when we ask the Bureau of Indian Affairs for a straight question. You can't get it. And I, with all due respect to Mr. Echo Hawk and Dr. Rubido, they're trying very hard. But you have an entrenched anti-progressiveness in the Bureau of Indian Affairs that doesn't want Indians to prosper and be successful. Some regions, yes, and a lot of regions, no. With that, Mr. Chairman, thank you.